Are you easy prey for the black-legged deer ticks that are carrying Lyme disease? The number of reported cases in Eau Claire County in 2007 was 106. In Chippewa County, 75 cases were reported. Statistics show, though, the highest number of Lyme disease cases are in Washburn and Burnett counties, as well as in Trempealeau, Rusk, Sawyer, and Price counties in western and northwestern Wisconsin. Overall, Wisconsin had 1,800 reported cases in 2007. But were there many more that weren't reported? For those who get antibiotics right away, the disease tends to go away. But members of the Western Wisconsin Lyme Action Group say it's under-recognized, under-reported, and under-treated. Is one round of antibiotics enough, or is more warranted for what's been termed chronic Lyme disease? Can you get over it without antibiotics? We have three people who know firsthand how this disease affects them or their family members. And you're welcome to join us as well. This is The West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. Marina Andrews is head of the Western Wisconsin Lyme Action Group. She is from Luck and knows firsthand the effects of Lyme disease. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Glad to be here.
Ann Kresick is from the Amory area, and she has also dealt with Lyme disease twice. And welcome to you.
Thank you very much for inviting us to come today.
Dr. Paul Gellner is a family practice physician in the Duluth Clinic in Spooner. He was the first to identify Lyme disease in northern Wisconsin in the 70s in his own family. And he's joining us from Spooner this afternoon. Welcome to you.
Good afternoon, Mary Jo.
Thanks so much for doing that. Marina Andrews, tell us first about your experience with Lyme disease.
Well, my actual downfall started in about 2001, and I found a deer tick on my right earlobe, and I was absolutely in a panic state because I had a friend who was completely debilitated by Lyme disease in the 80s, so I was terrified. So I took the tick, put it in a jar, went straight to the doctor, and showed it to him, and the lump that had been caused in my earlobe was so painful that I had to pull my hair back. I couldn't even let a strand of hair touch my earlobe without just about going through the ceiling. It was so sore. Anyway, of course, he wanted to touch it, and I just screamed, "You cannot touch it. It's too sore. Here's the tick. I want antibiotics," and he didn't want to give them to me. I said, "Look, I'm going to sit here all day. I will not leave until you give me antibiotics." He gave me 14 days of 10 days of doxycycline. I took it religiously because I did not want Lyme disease. About 2 months later, I started to have tinnitus, the ringing in my ears. I had horrible pressure in my ears. It felt like there was water in my ear. I was dizzy. I had trouble sleeping at night because of it. It was just awful. So I lived with it as best I could for a long time, and then I started a round of going to ENT doctors about all my symptoms and saying, "Please help me. Do you think this was from a deer tick?" "Oh, absolutely not. This couldn't be Lyme disease. It doesn't act like this. This isn't what happened to you." I went to, I don't know how many ear, nose, and throat doctors over a long course, Mayo Clinic, Marshfield, all over. And I kept telling them, "I think my symptoms are Lyme disease." "Well, no," they went. I began to have heart palpitations. I had fatigue. I developed carpal tunnel syndrome that came out of nowhere because I didn't have any, you know, risk factors for that. I didn't work at a keyboard or anything. I then moved to Luck, Wisconsin, and wound up with a little red rash behind my knee. And
so where were you at when you first got bit?
I had actually been in Minnesota.
Okay.
So I had been in Minnesota, and I lived in Forest Lake at the time. So then I came to Wisconsin, and I'm still fighting this problem. Now I get this little red rash behind my knee. It was kind of a ringed rash, and I was really scared. I'm like, "Oh, no, this is Lyme disease." Went to my doctor back in the Twin Cities, showed it to him. So he tested me right away. "Well, no, it wasn't Lyme disease," and he just said, "Well, you know, not to worry about it." Well, a few months later, then I got this horrible rash all over my butt and my legs, and I thought it was from the old washing machine that we had gotten when we bought our farm. I thought, "Well, it's not getting the soap out of the clothes. That's what's happening to me." So I kind of dismissed that. But I was still having the fatigue. The heart palpitations were getting worse. I didn't know what was going on. In this spring, this time I did get a bite, okay? And then I developed this tingling neck circle, and I felt very fluish and really sick. I had to leave work. Went to the doctor. He couldn't find anything wrong. And I would feel pretty good 1 minute and then horrible the next. So I had obviously another bite, got very, very sick. This time I developed paralysis of my left leg. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't get myself to the hospital. I called my doctor, Sabi, and he prescribed doxycycline. My husband picked it up on the way home, and I sort of pulled out of that. But then I knew that I wasn't well, so I kept getting doxycycline from different doctors and telling them that I had Lyme disease, and they tested me with Western blot. That was also negative. And then I was so sick by that time, I couldn't drive very far to go to doctors, and I was able to sometimes sit up and do research on the computer, and I researched every disease in the world, and I kept coming back to tick bites and what was happening to me, but no one seemed to want to listen. So actually, all I can say is it was learn or die.
You still have some of the symptoms.
I do. I still have a lot of symptoms. I believe I still have active disease.
Okay, Dr. Gellner, we'll talk a little bit about what Marina's situation, but give us a tick report from your area right now. What's it like?
I took a walk this afternoon, which is a good way to sample the local ticks. And anytime the snow goes away, the ticks show up. And the Ixodes tick, the deer tick, is one of the early ones. It comes out in May and June. There's a big increase in numbers. This afternoon, it was mostly dog ticks. The Derma Center, not thought to carry tick-borne disease. A few deer ticks were found on me and my dogs and my wife, but that's kind of like normal, you know, for a walk this time of year.
So what would you assume that the deer ticks that you found, what's the percentage of them that have the Lyme disease bug in them?
That's unknown as far as I can tell. People say that it's highly variable. Some areas will be maybe 50% or more infected, and then across the road it might be 10-20%. So the studies that I've seen that have studied that have been pretty, it's been remarkable how much variation you can get in a small area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't mean to assume you're an entomologist or anything like that. I just was wondering if the ticks that are then born this spring, have they then, if their mom or dad had it, they've got it too?
The tick doesn't get born with the disease. The tick has an interesting life cycle, and I am not an entomologist. I know a little about this, but the larva is a little six-legged critter, and that's the first stage, and then they go through a molt or an evolution or something, and they come out as a nymph, and the nymph is a very hungry critter. And the larva feeds and picks up the spirochete in feeding, and then the nymph has it, and they're considered the most infectious, the nymphs. And those are the really little ones with a reddish tinge to them. The later cycle is the adult, and they are infectious too, but the nymph seems to be the one that mostly carries the spirochete.
Oh, okay. So take us back a little bit. You were the first one to discover that Lyme disease was in northern Wisconsin way back in the 70s.
You're right. Like Marina's story, when it's in your family or in you, you get pretty focused on it. And I was a young physician in northern Wisconsin in 1974. I had a one-year-old daughter. I was in the process of sort of rehabbing an old farm outside of Spooner, and my brother came to help, my younger brother. And that, in 75, 76 it was, both of them got sick with some sort of a strange illness that had this really unique rash. That was 1975, 76, and my daughter went to the local medical people. I didn't try to take care of her. That's not a good thing for a local guy to do, is take care of his own family. My brother went down to Rochester, was seen at the Mayo Clinic, etc. but in neither of them was a diagnosis made. And at that time, I was trying to figure out what was wrong with my daughter, who was really pretty sick with a high fever and a rash, and I would carry her, you know, from the couch to the bathroom. I mean, she was really sick. And I'd read about this illness that was reported in Connecticut, in Lyme, Connecticut, where people got a rash and fever and so on. Anyway, to make a longer story shorter, eventually that was studied at the University of Iowa, and where I trained and my brother trained, and we concluded that it was the same disease called Lyme disease as had been reported a year or two earlier in Lyme, Connecticut. So it really, I think, was the first cluster of cases reported outside of New England.
And I think you said the antibiotics were not used then.
Correct.
Your daughter got nothing.
Correct. Untreated. There were three people, my brother, my daughter, and a friend. And none of the three were treated. At that time, there was no treatment available. There was no knowledge that it was a spirochete. There was a question of whether it was a virus. People really didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So and none of them got treated.
And what happened? They got better?
Yeah, they got better. Everybody got better eventually. With my daughter, I think she followed a fairly classic progression. She got over the rash, got over the fever, got better, and then a couple of months later, her knee became really swollen and sore, and she was hobbling around. And then that got better. It took a couple of weeks, and everything was fine for a month or 6 weeks or something. And then the same knee, it happened again. So she developed a relapsing knee arthritis. It happened several times, many times, over a period of like maybe a year, year and a half, maybe more. Always the same joint and always the knee. But each time seemed like it was a little bit less. It wasn't quite so bad. And then finally it went away.
Did she ever have a cycle of doxycycline, which is the antibiotic?
No, she never did.
Would it have made any difference if 10 years later, or would you ever take it then?
Well, my brother went that route. I hope he doesn't mind telling his medical history. he got over it, too. He went through some arthritis phase, too. And then years later, completely asymptomatic and feeling fine, he got worried that he might still have spirochete floating around in his circulation. So he took a course of antibiotics kind of proactively because he was afraid of what might happen if he didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear Ann Krasick. How did you experience Lyme disease?
Well, my story is different, just as so many other people. We all have a story to tell, and everyone's is different. But I'd like to start out by saying that at one time I had never heard of Lyme, and I had a friend who was a dog groomer, and I hadn't seen her for a while. And when I did, I asked her, gee, how have you been? How are you feeling? Oh, she said, I feel terrible, and I've been so sick, and I have Lyme disease. And I said to her, oh, that's too bad. I hope you get well soon. And then we just parted ways. I had no clue what she was really telling me and that how really sick she probably was. And I checked with her. This must have been 10, 15 years ago, and I just checked with her recently, and she's been free of any symptoms now for quite some time, but she sure went through a battle. And then when I got Lyme disease, I knew what a battle was all about, because I too, my doctor diagnosed me, and I had the test. I came in feeling with the aches and the fever. I felt like I had the flu. I hadn't found a tick on me. I'd had the Lyme vaccination, by the way. So being an avid gardener as I am, I just felt like that was my safety precaution.
So you'd had all three?
I had
like
all three, yes.
Three shots,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. And so I felt that I was immune from Lyme. And when I had these symptoms and went to my doctor and was tested, and I tested positive for Lyme, I didn't get treated right away, and I went back, and I guess I was one of those patients that, because of the time allotted doctors, I came with some more symptoms of feeling kind of just generally achy, lousy feeling, no energy, and so I went through that for a while, back and forth with the doctor, and I never was treated for Lyme.
Do you know why?
Well, as I said, I didn't. I don't know.
What year was that?
That was 1994.
And so.
And then in 1995, I was bitten by a tick. My husband found it. It was behind my knee, a red spot. So I went back, and before that, I was feeling just awful. I was in bed most of the time. I ached all over. I had a high fever. I would have preferred to have died.
Dr. Gellner, what year did we start using doxycycline just automatically?
Whoa, good question. I don't really remember.
Would it have been in earlier than mid-90s? Or?
I probably, probably around. I think Dr. Bergdorfer identified the spirochete in the mid-80s. And so antibiotics were used, I think, my guess is somewhere from about 85 on.
Okay.
Well, when I went in the second time, I was tested again, and I tested positive for Lyme, and then that time a co-infection, ehrlichiosis. And that co-infection was on top of my year of Lyme, so I started going downhill, and I was treated for the ehrlichiosis, but not for the Lyme. And actually, the medication you get for ehrlichiosis, I understand, is different from that with Lyme.
It's an antibiotic, though?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, and if I could jump
sure,
in there
go ahead.
Bit, the common treatment is doxycycline.
For Lyme?
For both Lyme and ehrlichia.
For both.
Okay.
The veterinarians literature on this is kind of interesting because you see both of these diseases in dogs.
Right.
And probably other animals too, but I know about dogs a little bit. So the vet will tell you that if they've got ehrlichia, they get better by tomorrow. If they've got Lyme, it'll take 2 or 3 days. But you give doxycycline for both diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be true in humans too, in my experience at least. Giving doxycycline to somebody with ehrlichia is a fun thing to do because it's a miracle. By the next day or certainly the following day, they're so much better. They just, you know, it's a fun thing to do.
I can understand why, because you'd like to see such progress in your patients. And it's good. The vets are good with this. And, in fact, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because there are people in our group that have often said they wish they were dogs and they'd be better. And it's sad.
Well, Marina, tell us more about your group. Why did the action group form?
Well, we started the Western Wisconsin Lyme Action Group because I realized how many sick people there were all around me, and I realized that they just had no information on Lyme disease. They didn't know that it could be very serious. They didn't know that you could have heart problems, have to have a pacemaker from it. They didn't know it causes paralysis. You can go blind. You can lose your hearing like I have. I've almost deafened this ear on my right side. I was just dumbfounded by the lack of knowledge that I saw in people and in their physicians. And I had faced some of the physicians, and they told me things that with my research, I knew that they were absolutely so far from true. It was unbelievable.
What would be an example of that?
Well, one doctor told me that the Lyme disease tests were 98% accurate, and that is so far from true. It was pathetic.
And Dr. Gellner, you would agree with that, I think.
Yes, I would. I certainly would. There are a lot of drawbacks to the testing, the lab testing, all the way from the timing of the test, and then the quality of the test, and the false positives and the false negatives, and the sensitivity and the specificity, et cetera. The laboratory testing for Lyme disease leaves an awful lot to be desired.
And so we don't even the test for Lyme disease would not have shown her ehrlichiosis either, or is that's a separate
Correct.
Test?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So what do? We have someone who's really, really sick with symptoms. When we get a negative test, then what do?
You keep feeling terrible, that's what you do, and then you have to go to a different doctor, and sometimes people will become positive later. So Dr. Gellner's right, the timing of the test can be absolutely critical. One of my pet peeves is you go into the doctor with this classic bullseye rash, and they go, well, we'll test you for Lyme disease, and then they make the patient wait until the tests come back. Well, they've got a classic symptom.
That's a mistake.
It is such a mistake. It's horrible. And that happens all the time.
And why is that happening? Is it a safety issue? A doctor needs a test, or why does that? Why is Dr. Gellner? Is this?
I don't know. It's I've heard of these cases that Marina's describing where people don't get the kind of immediate intervention that they really ought to get, and I don't quite understand it myself. It's a failure of education, a failure of awareness. I don't know.
I've actually talked to a person who went to a doctor, and they said, oh, so you've got a bullseye rash. We don't treat for the rash anymore. And the same doctor also told them, that's not even big. We've seen them way bigger than that and still offered no treatment.
Oh. I was reading in, I had a Lyme disease file. I was reading that President Bush, former President Bush, was treated for Lyme disease in 2006. He had the bullseye rash. It's no one escapes this little critter, I guess.
Right.
Well, they said that President Bush had STARI, which stands for Southern Tick-Associated Rash Illness. And he's lucky he got a rash from it, because if he had been tested on our conventional test today, they do not pick up STARI. So he would have not been told he had Lyme disease.
I don't know what STARI is.
It comes from Lone Star Ticks, which the Minnesota...
It's a different kind of tick.
It's a different kind of tick, okay. And the Minnesota Department of Health has confirmed that Minnesota has Lone Star Ticks, and we certainly know there are Lone Star Ticks in Wisconsin already, too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk about, when we come back, all of the different processes that people go through. Is there a chronic portion of Lyme disease? And how long should antibiotics be given? There's disagreement over that. We're wondering, is this connected to syphilis? There's some similarities there. Some people are saying there's a connection to Parkinson's, to multiple sclerosis, to fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. Is there anything to that? Or once you've had a Lyme disease, the bug, does it trip up your immune system? And then it doesn't work, and it becomes an autoimmune disease. Westside listeners, if you want to join us, well, perhaps you've had an experience you'd like to join, or ask Dr. Gellner or our guest from the Action Group a question, it's 1-800-228-5615. Dr. Paul Gellner is a family practice physician at the Duluth Clinic in Spooner. Ann Kresick is from the Amory area. Marina Andrews is from the Luck area. And all three of them have ties to Lyme disease. I'm Mary Jo Wagner, and this is The West Side. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner. Deer ticks are our topic this hour, the type known for carrying Lyme disease. They're widely associated with Wisconsin's Northwoods, according to Susan Paskowitz, a University of Wisconsin-Madison entomologist. However, she says they occupy a much larger territory. In 1994, a deer tick census led by Paskowitz revealed they'd already become established in the western two-thirds of the state. Since then, though, reports of Lyme disease and new infestations led Paskowitz to suspect they'd become prevalent throughout Wisconsin. So to find out, she conducted another census last fall, and the results confirmed her suspicions. Pretty much everywhere in Wisconsin is infested now, and the incidence of Lyme disease is increasing as well. And that's made some people's lives pretty miserable. Here to talk about it are Marina Andrews, head of the Western Wisconsin Lyme Action Group. She's from Luck and knows firsthand the effects of Lyme disease. Ann Kresick is from the Amory area and has dealt with Lyme disease twice. Dr. Paul Gellner is a family practice physician at the Duluth Clinic in Spooner. He was the first to identify Lyme disease in northern Wisconsin in the 70s in his own family. And let's go to Hayward, where David is on the line and has been waiting. Welcome to the West Side.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. And what's your experience?
My experience with Lyme's disease is about 15 years. And I was first diagnosed out in Monroe, Washington, with a bacteria they couldn't culture. And the most common tick bacteria is Bartonella. And it is exactly like Lyme's, only when it gets with Lyme's, it's deadly. And I just finished up with it, so I'm still alive.
So you've had it for 15 years?
Yep.
What was the treatment for that?
I started out with Roxanil in Washington, and then I went through the normal doctor excuses that it's the flu, you have to see a psychologist, you have to do this, it isn't Lyme's. And then finally this last bout was fevers to nosebleeds, chronic panic attacks. I was paralyzed for 3 days. I had amnesia for 3 days. Chronic backaches, pains, dry vomiting, anxiety, you can't believe.
And it's over for you.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
I ended up by taking Levaquin. I got off of doxycycline because it was doing absolutely no good. And doxycycline is not the only drug they use on this. Another monooxins that they use.
Uh-huh. Dr. Gellner, does this sound like something you've heard?
I have no experience with Bartonella. It's something I've only read about. So
once it gets in, once it interacts with the Lyme's complex, it's worse. It's a combination of a very deadly cocktail to explain it.
Well, David's right. Bartonella can be just horrible, and it's actually known for causing rage in people, unexplained rage.
Yep.
And on the west or on the east coast, I'm sorry, Bartonella is actually now found more often than Lyme disease.
Yeah, it's the most common tick bacteria.
He's right.
In Wisconsin?
Just to add something to this medical stuff, when penicillin came out, there was a 30% reduction in the mental health institutions across Europe. And they started tracking this down, and they were almost sure that they were after a bacteria that was even causing mental illness.
Hmm. Dr. Gellner, can you help us with that?
No.
I'm very well researched on this. So.
Okay.
Anyway, I ended up with 750 milligrams of Levaquin for 2 months, and then I was on 1,000 milligrams of ciprofloxacin for 2 months. And doxycycline did absolutely nothing for me.
All right. But you're doing better. That is really good news.
Yeah. It's literally like day and night.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks for the insight. Let's go to New Auburn, where Michael is on the phone.
Yes, I'm a retired pediatrician, and I would like to relate my experience. My wife had it. She was sitting under some pine trees where there were a lot of deer around, and because we were aware of the bullseye lesion, tetracycline, she wasn't even ill because we got it very early. But then I had some patients who were very difficult to diagnose, and I wanted to ask Dr. Gellner this, first of all, way back when I was in medical school, we were taught that syphilis was the great imitator, that it would imitate almost any other disease. And now it seems like this Lyme disease is that, but when we tried to diagnose it in some of these patients with multiple sclerosis, who had a suggestive history, the antibodies that came back were so inconsistent. One lab would say they were positive, and another would negative. And the patients and the doctors were very confused about this. So I have two questions for the doctor. One is, what is the natural history of the disease of people who are known to have it and get better without treatment versus those who are known to get it and progress? That's a hard thing to come by, but I wonder if there aren't a lot of people that had it and got better. And for instance, your guest, for example, who had the disease after her vaccination and then they didn't treat it. Well, to defend the doctors there, once you've had the vaccination, the antibody tests are no longer helpful. because you stimulate the same antibodies with the vaccine. So I guess, Dr. Gellner, can you tell me if these modern tests actually culture the spirochete out? And do you think that we've really missed a lot? The last caller's comment about penicillin being treated when it first came out in the 40s, and the mental health improved in 30%, that could have easily been undiagnosed spirochetes, mm-hmm. like syphilis even.
All right, let's get Dr. Gellner in here.
Well, kind of a bunch of questions. Early in the course of this, back in the 70s, this was before the spirochete was discovered, maybe by about 10 years. There were a lot of people that simply had Lyme disease and didn't get treated with antibiotics. And those records are old records, but now kind of interesting to look at, from mostly Lyme, Connecticut, and it was the material that was studied by the people at Yale, particularly by Dr. Steer, who was working at that time at Yale. And so there's good information about what happens with untreated Lyme disease, because there's a whole cohort of people there. By and large, most of them get better. So, you know, I think you can say most people with untreated Lyme disease will get better. Some of them don't. Some of them go on to have late manifestations. Sometimes the late manifestations sort of burn themselves out. And sometimes they just go on and they have bad arthritis or a neurologic Lyme disease, which can present like Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yes.
As far as the tests go, the tests do not rely on culture. The culture is a tough thing to do, and this organism tends to live in tissue rather than blood, so the blood tests that are commonly used are antibody studies, and there's a great debate about how accurate these antibody studies are. Some people think they're really good, and some people think they're really bad, and I think they leave a lot to be desired.
Yes.
Could either of you ever justify not treating someone?
I think not, since tetracycline is such a benign drug, a short course.
No, I agree completely. I think people use tetracycline for acne. You know, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Think twice about it.
What about this connection then to syphilis? Is this the new syphilis?
Well, it's a similar bug. It's a spirochete. It's a kind of a corkscrew-like organism under the microscope, and it has its effect in almost every tissue of the body. And so, in that regard, it's a lot like syphilis. Mm-hmm. It goes through phases, you know, primary, secondary, tertiary stuff. There's a lot of analogies one can draw to the mm-hmm. syphilis problem.
I'd like to add that
Marina.
The Lyme disease spirochete is much more complex than the syphilis spirochete.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, it has, help me out, Dr. Gellner, I think it has more plasmids, it has blebs, which I don't believe syphilis has. It has a lot more microbiological traits that the syphilis spirochete does not have.
I couldn't speak with authority on that. I don't know that.
Let me go to Downing, where Kendra is on the phone. Kendra?
Hello.
Hi. Tell me your experience.
Well, I got attacked, I'd say, by ticks over in Somerset, Wisconsin in 2002, and shortly after that I became very sick, and I went through the whole mess with all the doctors and trying to get you on antidepressants, telling you that you're depressed, and, well, you certainly are when you're sick with Lyme's, but I just started seeing this doctor, and he put me on Biaxin, because I was reinfected a couple years ago north of Connersville, and he put me on Biaxin, and I'm feeling a lot better from it, and I just want to know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you're feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I've been sick with it for, well, 2002, and I've been through all the doxycycline and the homeopathic medicines, but this Bioxin is really helping me.
Okay.
And there's starting to become a good awareness out there about Lyme disease, and I'm just happy about that.
We're so glad you called in, because that's the awareness that we are trying so hard to foster here in this area, and especially with families and children who play outdoors more
mm-hmm.
than we and
mm-hmm.
get out in the woods. And this time of the year, if anybody comes down with a flu and the aches and chills and all of that, that could very well be Lyme. And
so we got this complicating factor, though. The swine flu is still going around. Now, Dr. Gellner, what would be the signs that somebody comes to you with flu that you would sort out which was which?
Well, that's the kind of stuff that gives me sleepless nights.
Well, at least you're losing sleep. I don't think the rest of the doctors are, Dr. Gellner.
But, there's an analogy that I would like to bring up here. Years and years ago, I did a little work in Africa.
Okay.
And there, malaria is endemic, okay? This is a disease that's spread by an insect, so it's got some similarities. It was a very poor place to work, so there were not many lab facilities, et cetera. So if somebody would come in with a fever, we would treat them for malaria. And if they got better, fine. If they didn't, then we'd try to figure out what was wrong with them. So in a sense, these days, when somebody comes into the office when there's no snow on the ground, in the right time of year, not usually in the middle of the winter, and they're sick, I think you do have to sort of think this could be tick-borne illness, no matter what the symptoms are and what the blood test might show.
Well, and it's so weird right now, though, with the swine flu. We're still the second highest state in the country with the swine flu going around, right? And so would you first of all treat with Tamiflu, or would you go to doxycycline?
Well, I think that the influenza, I don't really know. I mean, usually there's more, you ache all over. There's a similarity. Mm-hmm. Hard to distinguish that from a lot of other diseases. Mm-hmm. More of a sore throat, more respiratory symptoms.
This is Kendra again, and I could say if you have something like brain fog and you get, like putting your keys somewhere and losing them, it's different than being on a road that you've drove on like a million times and forgetting where you are. Or if you have any of this like half facial paralysis, which is very vague and hard to see. But I just wanted to mention one thing. If I take tea tree oil and I mix it with a little bit of water and put it in a spray bottle, and they don't like it. If you're out in the woods, put it on. Spray it underneath your neck, underneath your hair, on your neckline, and all your pulse points around, they don't like it, so.
Well, good.
So I'm going to hang up, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Kendra, for calling.
All right. It's 1-800-228-5615 if you want to join us. I want to sort through this chronic disease, Lyme disease, that I know, Marina, your group has gotten involved in, or Anne, either one of you can talk about this. Your group is in, and some of the people believe that long-term treatment is needed, but many doctors are saying no, and some have been suspended for long-term antibiotic use.
That's true. That's really true. And it's so sad that doctors have to be afraid to treat people for Lyme disease. And the specter of that, they all know that some doctors have been prosecuted for the overuse of antibiotics. And actually, the whole controversy in Lyme disease started a way long time ago when Dr. Alan Steer wrote a paper called The Overdiagnosis of Lyme Disease. So robbing physician autonomy way back when, questioning doctors in Wisconsin, Minnesota, are you really seeing Lyme disease? Oh, you can't possibly be. So this has kind of gone on for a long time. And now the Infectious Diseases Society of America says no matter how long you've had Lyme disease, no matter how sick you are, we will give you 3 to 4 weeks antibiotics at the maximum, and you will be fine. You will no longer have Lyme disease.
Dr. Gellner, tell me your thinking on that.
That's the hard part to me. Acute disease, I think, is easier to deal with, easier to treat. I think easier to conceptualize. Chronic diseases can be really hard. And then the notion that, we know somehow how long one needs to administer an antibiotic to treat this thing is, I don't think people really know. There are questions about the efficacy of the aspect of the antibiotic, the tissue penetration, type of microbe that you're dealing with, and antibiotic resistance, and all of those issues come into play. And there are people that have Lou Gehrig's disease, and there are people that have Alzheimer's disease, and there are people that have multiple sclerosis, and they don't have Lyme disease. You know, and there's a thought that maybe some of those people do, and maybe just sort of looks like Lou Gehrig's, and if they only had, you know, 3 more months of antibiotics, it would be a treatable condition. You know, that's really a poorly defined area in medicine, and there are lots of people on both sides of the fence. I really don't know what to say about that. It confuses me as much as it confuses anybody.
Can I say something about that?
Sure.
Thanks, Dr. Gellner. It is a confusing area, and part of the problem is we don't have perfect tests. We cannot prove, even after, say, years of antibiotics, that a person is completely free of the spirochete. We will not know that until we develop better tests. So it is a tough area. But I have seen long-term antibiotic treatment help people.
How long is long-term?
Years, if that's what it takes.
You know, there are some severe consequences for that.
Well, there can be for the doctor. The patients who have Lyme disease and call themselves chronic, or as Dr. Gellner would like to say, maybe tertiary, I think is a better term, and they take their antibiotics and they get better, I think the risk to them, or they're going to say they are willing to take the risk.
Mm-hmm. The symptoms, we're worrying that creating resistant bugs if you keep taking antibiotics, possible death. There's other consequences, colitis. Lots of things can come from long-term use.
Well, any doctor is very careful. You have to have blood tests, monitor, make sure you're doing okay. And certainly any type of diarrhea can be a very serious ramification from antibiotic use. So you would be taken off of that antibiotic right away.
In Wisconsin, Dr. Gellner, would you be allowed to give more than 1 month of an antibiotic for Lyme disease?
Well, as far as I know, I've never felt any pressure from anybody the sense of looking over my shoulder in that regard. No, I think I certainly could, and in fact I have. Sometimes it's almost against my better judgment, but I think that it's, as our previous caller mentioned, a fairly benign treatment, and when the potential for help is so, you know, good, I think you can make that judgment.
Okay, let's go to Springbrook, where Kurt is on the line.
Yeah, I just like to know if your guests think that we're taking this disease, that the medical establishment is taking this disease serious enough, and I'd like to hear a little bit about the politics behind it, and I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Anne, you haven't had an input here for a little while.
Well, thank you very much. Marina is better suited to answer this question, but I thank the caller for his question because it is important. But before I bow out here and I'm looking at the clock, I need to ask your audience to be mindful this summer, to pass it on that the symptoms of Lyme are so varied. The caller, that lady that just called previous, she had some symptoms she mentioned that are just very important to know about. But my point now will be to be your own advocate. Try to educate your doctor. If you aren't able to, go to the next doctor until you find one. Make sure that you get your medical records, because it wasn't until I got my medical records that I realized that I did have Lyme. I should have been treated, and I wasn't, and I had to find a doctor that would treat me. So that's very important to have an advocate go with you, because sometimes you're so sick you feel like you would rather die, and you need somebody to drive you, to help you, to be your support person.
So really bad case of flu. It's
the worst. And the depression that goes on with it. You just as soon go to a nursing home and die.
Politics, Marina, if you want to address that, and the fact that some people are just told it's in your head.
Well, I'd like to say first that I don't think the medical profession is taking Lyme disease seriously enough. It is a very serious illness. People do die. Just last November, advocate and the Lyme group leader in Minnesota died at the age of 41 from Lyme disease.
How do you know what he died from?
How do I know what she died from?
She, yes.
She died from the Lyme disease getting into her heart and causing cardiac arrest. Unfortunately, many deaths from Lyme disease are marked down as cardiac arrest.
Dr. Gellner, before we go, what is your main line of prevention?
Well, I think the main thing to do is just to be aware of it. I think the educational factor here is good. I think if you're walking in the edge where field meets woods, that's where these critters live. Tuck your pants into your socks, and as soon as you get in, throw your clothes in the laundry and go take a quick shower. I mean, every time I go out, I go through that.
You know, there's going to be people say, oh, don't let the kids go out. There's ticks out there.
I don't think you can do that. I mean, at least that's not my approach.
Good for you. Good for you. I still garden, too. So.
Well, I've heard that, you know, and I know we went on the Ice Age Trail and we came back covered with ticks. They were all wood ticks. We just picked them off, and I didn't realize I wasn't supposed to pick them off with my fingers. I should have gloves. A Kleenex or a glove. I didn't know that. So.
Yes. And I'd like to say, too, Dr. Gellner, I don't know why doctors maintain that the wood ticks don't carry diseases. They carry both ehrlichiosis and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. So you are not safe if you get bitten by a wood tick.
Okay, I didn't know that. I the studies that I've read haven't really shown me that, but if you could send me the literature, I'd love to read it.
I can send it to you. Thank you, Dr. Gellner.
Good. Dr. Paul Gellner is a family practice physician at the Duluth Clinic that's in Spooner. He was the first to identify Lyme disease in northern Wisconsin in the 70s, and it was his own family, daughter and brother. Thanks so much for helping us.
Well, thank you.
Marina Andrews is head of the Western Wisconsin Lyme Action Group. She is from Luck and knows firsthand the effects of Lyme disease. Thanks so much for helping us.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
And Ann Krissick is from the Amory area and dealt with Lyme disease twice. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks also to Henry Lippold for help producing this program and Mort Cypress for on-air production. Do you have a website, Marina, people can go to?
Well, if they go to limeworks.com,
okay,
they can see our Lyme disease survey that we did and the answers to the true-false questions. Little education there.
Audio archives of this program, if you want to hear it, wpr.org/WHWC. This is The West Side. I'm Mary Jo Wagner.